Joel Pollack, you are well known to the Biz News audience at this stage, and we need to get your thoughts on the latest debacle between the United States and South Africa with the expulsion of Ibrahim Rasool, the South African ambassador to the U.S. Please share your thoughts.
Well, he dug his own hole, really, because you don't go in public, certainly, and call the president of the United States a white supremacist leader. His analysis was really conspiratorial and, to my mind, a little crazy, but that's just my personal view. He is the ambassador of South Africa, or was the ambassador of South Africa to the United States. And you just don't expound on those conspiracy theories in public, especially at a time when you're trying to repair relations with the United States. And the Trump administration took very swift action the same day he was declared persona non grata. I believe he has a few days to collect his belongings and leave.
What does this mean ultimately for the escalating tensions between the U.S. and South Africa? Do we have the opportunity to suggest another ambassador to the U.S.?
Sure. I think it is a signal to the South African government that this is not a crisis that can be resolved simply by sending the right person to say the right words or to meet with the right people. This is fundamentally about South Africa's policies, particularly its foreign policies, but also some of its domestic policies that affect foreign investors. And I think South Africa has to come to the table with compromises. Those compromises are more important than whoever they send to Washington. When people would ask me in the past about Rasool and whether he was the right person, I would always say, it's really none of my business. South Africa can send whoever it wants to send. And judging on the basis of Rasool's public record, he accurately reflects the policy positions of the South African government. So it's not a matter of switching him out for someone else. The support he has shown publicly, for example, to the terrorist group Hamas, which carried out the bloodthirsty mass murder on October 7th, 2023. Unfortunately, that is also supported by the African National Congress, which has had meetings with Hamas and hosted them and so forth. So it's distasteful to Americans, but on the other hand, that's the government South Africa elected, so they're going to send someone who holds those views. Now, what Rasool did was he went really outside the boundaries, and he accused the president of the United States of leading a global white supremacist movement. This is basically like saying he's Adolf Hitler or something like that. And you can say that perhaps on the campus of UCT, but you cannot say it in Washington if you represent South Africa. And even in this country, there are people who say crazy things like that, but it's really not going to be a basis for having a conversation after that. Why would the White House talk to anyone who held those views? So I think there is a bit of a distortion in the South African media when it comes to understanding the president of the United States, why he was elected and by whom, and some of the foreign policy alliances that he has made. And I do think that misconception is partly our own fault here in the United States. We do export a lot of our mainstream media, CNN and others, who do present a skewed perspective on American politics. I think it's amplified also by some of the coverage in Europe. And then the dominant bias, I would say, in South African media is toward the left. And so there's a kind of political monoculture when it comes to talking about global politics and domestic affairs as well, but especially about the United States. And I just think that it's possible South African elites have become so used to disparaging Donald Trump and to attacking the Republican Party or conservative voters in the United States that Rasool didn't realize perhaps that what he was saying was not just controversial, but deeply insulting, because it wasn't just Trump he attacked. He also said that the Make America Great Again movement, in other words, the majority or near majority, the popular vote win that Trump won from millions and millions of Americans, was somehow motivated by nativism and racism. Trump got a bigger share of the Black American and Hispanic American vote than any Republican in recent memory. Those voters are not racist. So it shows a failure to understand the American electorate. And I think that failure comes from imbibing a kind of ordinary garden variety left-wing agitprop as a kind of media diet. It is not good for understanding reality. And hopefully the South African government and South African elite society, including the media, will understand from this that they have to reevaluate their perspective on the United States. I think there is a lot of positive that can come out of this. I think the relationship can be repaired, but South Africa has to change its mindset and come to the table with compromises.
What do you make of the South African presidency's response that the situation is regrettable?
It is regrettable. It's deeply regrettable. And it's South Africa that has to fix it.
Do you think that's an adequate response? There are many commentators here in South Africa that are saying it's a relatively nondescript response and not impactful enough.
Well, I don't think it can be sufficient to say it's regrettable. I think, and I can't speak for the Trump administration, but I think there would probably be some understanding that the South African government might want to regroup, to collect its thoughts, to think things through over the weekend. And so to put out a statement saying that it is regrettable, it's probably all right, especially as they also said in that statement, they advised people to observe decorum, which I think was a signal to other South Africans not to lash out at the United States. I think it showed in a way that the South African government did get at least some kind of message from this. And so I think there is some patience on the American side to give the South African government time to absorb what happened and to understand the changes that are necessary. So I can't speak for the administration, but I don't think it was necessarily taken the wrong way. I do think that the administration wants to see real compromises on the table, and I think that can be the basis for restarting the relationship.
Joel, talking about compromise, it doesn't look as though the renaming of Sandton Drive to Leila Khalid Drive is on the table for renegotiation. It looks as though that is going ahead in terms of what government is, or the city of Johannesburg is driving for. I mean, we've heard that that would result in the closing of the U.S. embassy. What would happen if that's the next step?
Or the consulate, actually, because the purpose of renaming, as we all know, because we've seen the media reports, as the ANC itself has said, the purpose of renaming the street is an attempt to force the U.S. consulate to put the name of a Palestinian terrorist hijacker who only failed because she was stopped by other people on the flight and air marshals who successfully prevented her from killing innocent civilians. They want her name on the letterhead of the United States of America. That will never happen. And it's going to be met with a very stern response. I don't know why South Africa would want to name any street after a hijacker. I understand that there are different perspectives on the tactics used during the liberation struggle and so forth. But you have to understand, and I'm sure you do understand, that South Africa has a bit of an image problem when it comes to ordinary crime, never mind international relations. And Johannesburg is known, or has been known in the past, for, unfortunately, armed hijacking of passenger vehicles. When Americans come to the country, they understand that. When they come to South Africa, they understand there is a risk, there's high crime. Why would you amplify that risk and those fears by naming one of the most important streets in Johannesburg after a hijacker? They've cast this as some kind of support for the Palestinians. It also doesn't help them either, because they need to get past using violence and terrorism. They need to start doing some real peacemaking, institution building. Otherwise, they're just going to keep moving backwards. But aside from that, the South African economy is not well served by advertising the violent crime problem by renaming a major thoroughfare after a hijacker, whether it's an airplane hijacker or a car hijacker. It just does not work. And so the consulate, I think, is in peril if you do that. But also, Sandton is in peril. I mean, the central hub of the South African economy, South African finance, African finance, is going to be undermined by this ridiculous move. And by the way, I watched the Johannesburg City Council debate over this. And the bigotry on display, the anti-Semitism, the attacks on a Jewish speaker, frankly, were disgusting. I haven't really heard condemnation of those either. So if you want people to invest in South Africa, you are really sending the wrong message, if you don't mind me saying so.
What does it mean if the consulate is closed? The actual hard facts. So translate that for the average South African. The U.S. consulate is closed in Johannesburg. What does that mean?
Well, again, I should stress, I'm not speaking officially for the Trump administration, but what it would mean is that South Africans who need consular services, whether it's visas or other things, would have to go elsewhere. They'd have to go to the embassy in Pretoria or the consulate in Cape Town. But the United States will not be located on a street named for a terrorist. It will not happen. So I'm given to understand that the city manager in Johannesburg has the final say, that despite the very lopsided nature of the vote in the Johannesburg City Council, there is some procedure by which this can be stopped. And as someone who would like to see relations between South Africa and the United States improve and would like to see the South African economy grow and create jobs, including union jobs, I would strongly encourage South Africans to rethink this decision, because it does mark a downward spiral, I think, for the Johannesburg financial sector and for Sandton, and probably for the country and the continent. If that's what South Africa wants to embrace, Americans want no part of it. And I think you can understand why.
I was just looking at the European Union South Africa summit that happened last week in Johannesburg. And I'm now coming back to the broader discussion on US-SA relations. Perhaps there is some impetus from the support that South Africa is receiving from the European Union. They are tabling a 4.7 billion euro package, financial package for South Africa. Perhaps that's part of the bravado that we're seeing, you know, that South Africa does feel that now as president of the G20, they have friends in other places. Do you think that is an ill-conceived way to look at the global order at the moment?
Well, you know, good luck. You can rely on the European Union, which can't defend itself without American weapons and American money. The European Union, which can barely defend its own boundaries and is going to be embroiled in a significant trade dispute with the United States and is not as big a trade partner for South Africa as is the United States or China. It's interesting. We are told by many people in the ruling party in South Africa that they adopt an anti-colonial posture, and this carries through to all of their foreign policy stances, whether toward the Middle East or toward the world in general. And yet they are embracing, in a sense, the former colonial powers of Africa as their saviors. The United States, aside from a few experiments in West Africa, is not a colonial power in Africa in the same sense, although, yes, there is a dark history of slavery and so forth, which we also struggle with. But we're not a colonizing power in South Africa. We've always tried to be at least a positive source of investment and inspiration. And if you're going to embrace the old colonial world over the United States, well, good luck to you. But just remember that the Europeans are pretty much incapable of following through on their commitments. And they depend on the United States for their defense. And they're going to be having to struggle with some budgetary issues in the future as far as it relates to that. The United States has demanded that Europe increase its defense spending to comply with the NATO treaty requirements. And some countries have already started doing so after President Trump demanded that they do so in his first term. But I see the EU stepping in here with promises on paper and trying perhaps to fill the gap and to look good, perhaps even for a domestic audience back in Europe. And that's fine. By the way, I don't begrudge South Africa trade with Europe. If that trade pans out, great. But it's not a substitute for the United States. And I don't think South African legislators or the leaders of the South African government can try to paper over what's happened with the United States by bringing in Europe. But if you want to try, you know, South Africa's a sovereign country, go ahead.
I've heard murmurs that we will be expelled from the Africa Growth Opportunity Act come the 2nd of April. Any validity? Have you heard anything along those lines?
I haven't. I wouldn't rule it out, because South Africa is actually in violation of the treaty. There's a clause in the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act enabling legislation that says the benefits of participation only extend to those countries that do not oppose American interests on the world stage. It doesn't mean you can't have a separate foreign policy, but if you are really seen as opposing American interests, then you don't benefit from trade with the United States on preferential terms. That seems logical, and that's in the legislation. South Africa has sided with Iran, with China, with Russia, with the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas. It has attacked in a very vehement way the Democratic government of Israel, which is a close ally of the United States. All of that is against U.S. national security interests. Plus, South Africa has now gone and formed something called the Hague Group, which intends to strengthen international institutions such as the International Criminal Court, which the United States is not a party to, but which persists in trying to investigate members of the United States military. So it's now under sanctions from the United States, and South Africa wants to strengthen the ICC. In fact, President Cyril Ramaphosa co-authored an op-ed in a newspaper criticizing President Trump over his sanctioning of the ICC. All of that is against the national security interests and the foreign policy interests of the United States. So South Africa has done its best to earn its way out of AGOA. I would add two things. First of all, given that the Republican House and Republican Senate in the United States Congress has become more skeptical of some of these international trade deals, it's not guaranteed that AGOA itself will be renewed when it expires at the end of September, at the end of the fiscal year. So whether South Africa is in or out may not be as important as the survival of the treaty itself, but we'll see. The other point I would stress is that when I try to look at the positive potential in this moment, I do think that if South Africa comes to the table with compromises on the Expropriation Act, with compromises on BEE investment, making it easier for foreign companies to invest in South Africa without divesting 30% of their shares to a complete stranger, if South Africa drops the ICJ case against Israel and encourages the Palestinians to abandon the armed struggle, and if it does a few other things and comes to the table, I think South Africa can aim for a bilateral treaty with the United States that is far stronger and far better for both countries than AGOA. And I think that's the real prize. And I think it could be fantastic, actually. I think there could be huge and enthusiastic trade and travel and tourism and communications and investment and cross-cultural, cross-pollination. I mean, everything you can think of between the United States and South Africa. But South Africa has to choose the side of the Western democratic nations and has to stop supporting terrorism, supporting Iran, supporting a destabilization of the global order, and frankly, accusing the president of being a white supremacist.
Would you say that right now, as things stand, we are closer to widespread sanctions with the U.S. than achieving a acceptable or a mutually beneficial bilateral agreement?
I think we're closer to negative outcomes than positive outcomes, because I don't see any real movement from the South African government. I will also say there's some discussion in American foreign policy circles about how to tailor any response to South Africa in a targeted way, because there is a growing understanding that not all South Africans are responsible for the policies of the South African government or the statements of the ambassador or various other people. And there isn't a real desire to punish the country itself, especially those constituencies who don't feel that they have a say. If you live in the Western Cape, for example, you can elect the opposition party to govern you and, okay, you can enjoy a different quality of life than perhaps the rest of South Africa has done. But if you are an opposition voter for whatever party in another province, you may not have that opportunity because the ANC has been so dominant. And look, that's up to South Africans to decide. But it does mean there are a significant number of South Africans who don't feel represented and really have no prospect of feeling represented, but who might have different policy views and might be the ones hurt the most by a decline in relations or by sanctions that hit South Africa as a whole. So I think there is an effort to look at more targeted responses. And I can't say exactly what those would be, although sanctions against ANC officials and other officials who have been named by South Africa as having been implicated in corruption, the Zondo Commission report, for example, I think that is a possibility. It's being looked at right now. And I do think the United States wants to send a message to South Africa and side with the South African people, really, against those who've been pushing for this divide and pulling South Africa into a downward spiral.
Joel, I just want to come back to Ibrahim Rasool. Has this happened before? Does it happen on a regular basis where the ambassador to a country is expelled?
It's very rare. Students of diplomacy know this process or procedure. It's well known enough that it's understood by members of the Foreign Service. But it is rare. The persona non grata status is typically reserved for extreme cases, usually if a diplomat commits some kind of crime. Diplomats have immunity, not just in the United States, but in other countries, And that generally shields them from most prosecutions. But if they commit some really terrible act and they're going to be prosecuted, generally the host country will declare them persona non grata, and then they have to leave and they face whatever consequences they have to face in their home country. So this is a fairly unusual step, but it's also, I must say, unusual for an ambassador to express himself in that way. And there are many ambassadors who don't like President Trump, who don't like the United States. I think there was a kind of arrogance with which the remark was delivered. And keep in mind also that Ambassador Rasool had been trying to develop contacts with the White House, with members of Congress. And having reached out in that way, he then insulted the president. I think you have to look at it in that context. He knew his job was to repair relations, and instead of putting every effort toward doing that, he decided to impress his South African audience by calling Trump a white supremacist. It's the combination of those two things, I think, that made the persona non grata process necessary, even though it is one of the more severe sanctions that a country can produce against a diplomat.
Joel, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I've been chatting to Joel Pollack, who's a senior editor at Breitbart. Joel, thank you. I just want to check